This week, Crowd Colts manager Gav Cooper looks forward to a special end of the season, hopefully. Welcome to Grassroots Plus, sponsored by Gusto Homes.
Gusto Homes have been innovating in the residential house building sector for over 25 years, with a focus on building clean energy homes in sustainable communities. Tonight's guest makes a welcome return. As you heard, it's Gav Cooper, manager of Crowd Colts. Good evening, Gav, and welcome back.
Good evening. Thanks for having me. I must have done okay the first time around, so pleasure to be back.
Well, Ofcom never complained, so you must have been okay.
Thank goodness.
And lots to talk about. A move of leagues, a county cup final, pyramid or not the pyramid. Nobody really seems to know, well, at least until tonight when you're going to tell us. And a night match this week, which has all but ended. Any hopes of the championship? So, masses to talk about, but we're also going to do our own news, views, gossip, and of course a train ride and Dave's Mystic Meg and all the normal things. And one of the normal things we do, of course, is we start with a roundup of last Saturday's football in the UCL North.
With the UCL North division down to six matches, Melton Town and Skegness Town both had to settle for a point on the road. Sleaford won at Deeping and Hena beat Belper by the odd goal in five. Hucknall versus Newark and Sherwood United encounter brought together the division's best home and away supported teams. The result was a crowd of 295. The match itself saw the home side play better with 10 men, but still lose out to a resurgent Newark and Sherwood United. In the final match, Kimberley shared a goal and a point with Boston Town.
And into step six.
If you take it as read that Bourne will win the UCL Division 1 title and Clipston have accumulated enough points to ensure they will not drop out of the playoff places, it leaves three places to play for, heading the charge in Newark Town. 3-1 victories over fellow chasers Birstall United and Kirby Muxlow, who beat Sandy Acre 5-2. Not such a productive day for the other hopefuls, Dunkirk losing at home to Lutterworth, Harrowby only being able to manage a draw at Leicester St Andrews, and Blackstones beaten by Clifton. At the bottom, it's beginning to look a bit grim for Renneth, despite a goalless draw with Saffron. Better news for Selston, back-to-back victories giving them a five-point cushion. Shirebrook hit the top of the NCL Step 6 division with a 3-0 victory at fellow promotion hopefuls Beverley Town. Retford United had to settle for a point in their top six clash with Wanwell, while Retford FC had their best victory of the season, a 4-0 win at Selby Town.
And into the feeder leagues.
Seven victories from the last 10 matches will ensure Nettleham a first Lincolnshire Football League title. And for a team that's only lost twice all season, that should be a formality. A comfortable 3-0 victory at Grimsby United, preserving their 10-point lead at the top. If Crowe Colts can't go up to the pyramid, and we'll hear more about that later, it's down to Appleby Frodingham to finish in the top five. A 4-2 victory at Lincoln United moves the Steelworkers to within 3 points of pyramid land. In the Boston League, Fulbeck returned to winning ways with a 5-1 home victory over Bull Athletic, while Spilsby and Swineshead played out a goalless 120 minutes in the semi-final of the Sharman Burgess Cup. And a home defeat to 15th place West Bridgeford has all but ended Collingham's hope of catching Stapleford in the race for Notts Senior League title and a coveted Step 6 place.
Back to the Lincolnshire League in just a second, but a quick one-line Cornish corner because they got beat.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet you wished it had rained, hadn't you? A 4-2 defeat to league leaders Holman Sports Club marked the return for Lizard Argyle after a five-week break.
Okay, well, we did get some football in the week. The rain did obviously try its best to make it to make a mess of it, and I've been told I can't blame Greta Thunberg every time it rains, but I am doing. First things first, that after Loughborough Students beat Ashby in the UC in the United Counties North, that guarantees Lincoln United are very much out of form in the league. Lincoln United, a playoff spot at the very least. And if Sherwood win at Eastwood on Saturday and Lincoln lose at Skegness, which on current form is very possible, and Sherwood, David, will be crowned champions.
Yes, they will have done very well as well, particularly to wrap it up this early before the end of the season. Their manager was actually watching Newark and Sherwood on Saturday, and he was he mentioned it was a possibility, but he wasn't taking anything for granted. But yeah, Wayne Savage was obviously very upbeat about the way they've been playing of late. And yeah, full marks to them. They have really snuck up as the dark horses, haven't they? And just got on and done it all.
The midweek match of the week, if you like, under lights in our catchment area, was our guest team, Crowell Colts and Netland. If Crowell Colts had won that game, it was 11 points behind the, shall we say, champions elect with a game in hand. If they lost the game, then there's a country mile between the two teams. So let's get a match report from the home team's manager.
Well, where can I start? Yeah, it was a tough night for us, really, in the end. There's no doubt about it. Looking at the record, you know, Netland have got in the league even before the game was played. You know, we're under no illusions that, you know, would have done very well to have caught them. You know, I think they've won 21 out of 23 or something like that. You know, fair play to them. They're certainly the best team we've faced this year. The beat of, you know, on both occasions, 3-2. So we're not far off them, but they're definitely a good side. In regards to the game, the Knicks won early, first 5 minutes, and then we've had a man sent off after half an hour. So from there on, then it was certainly an uphill task. Even though we went in at the break 1-1, stuck a punch straight after half time. You know, you tell all the lads all the things, you know, keep it tight. All the things you'd expect to hear, and they've probably scored within a minute or two. So it takes the wind right out of our sails. And then they nick another from a corner, which is disappointing for us because I think both goals, especially from my point of view, had nothing to do with the fact that, you know, they had a man extra. It was just, you know, a cross and a set piece. So almost, you know, really disappointing for me that. And, you know, the lads couldn't argue the facts. We've got a penalty with probably 2 or 3 minutes left. And I think if that had come, you know, 5 minutes earlier, looking at how the last 2 minutes went, we may well have nicked one, but, you know, we didn't. And I think going off the full game, Netland, if I'm being really honest with myself, deserved the 3 points and no doubt deserved to win the league.
Is it a problem discipline-wise for you? I noticed there was two off at the County Cup semi-final and one off in last night's big game.
Yeah. It's probably difficult to argue that point, isn't it, going off, you know, what you've just said, but it hasn't been all season. Our disciplinary record's pretty normal. You know, if you look across the rest of the league, it's not something we're not worried about. You know, we had one off, like you say, and I'm sure we'll speak about the semi-final. We had one off early, and then we had one off late in the, you know, in extra time where tired legs and you know, things like that are coming to play. But no, I won't say it's an issue.
The two that walk in the semi-final, I take it, will be available for the final. What about the one last night? Because that's getting tight now, isn't it?
Yeah, no. So going at the minute, he won't be available as it stands. It's only my common knowledge or not. We are appealing the decision.
Okay.
So whether or not that changes that, we don't know. But it's worth appealing, we think. Talking to certain people around it, you know, thankfully we video a lot of our games, so we've got some footage that we think gives an opportunity. Whether or not it goes through or not, we don't know, but we think it's worth trying.
I just think I know you have to stick by the rules and all things like that, but I think it's terribly harsh on a player that he's playing because he loves playing football, not because, you know, he's a professional footballer or anything like that. And he's going to miss the biggest game of his career. We had one at Newark and Sherwood last season. My heart bleeds for him because it was a footballing sending off. It was a definite booking and a harsh red. I think that's probably about the bottom line of it. And it puts him out of the one game that, you know, he will remember.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, obviously, I don't know the scenario that player went through, but it sounds very similar to this one. the boys tried to make a tackle. It's not two-footed, even though the ref said it was, and the clip shows it wasn't. He's come from the side. You probably put it in the bracket often of yellow, orange. I think red was harsh, I really do. Knowing the player, like you say, he's not the type by any means who's trying to hurt anybody. I know that counts for nothing, but like you say, it's now the lad's devastated, you know, and he's trying to do his best for the team on the other night to win the ball. And like you say, he's gutted, and so are we, because obviously you're going to potentially miss a player in the final.
It's these stupid FA rules, isn't it? Because, I mean, if you get sent off in a league match, I think you can still play in the VARs, or you get bookings. I think the disconnected between the two, yet this cup and league are connected again. I just think it's down to...
Well, I suppose, in fairness to that situation, Mick, the lads who got sent off in the semi wouldn't have been able to play in the final. So, you know, we can't be happy one way and then not in this scenario, if we're being really fair and honest.
Yeah, I suppose so. Whatever you do, you can't win, can you?
No.
Okay, this is Grassroots Plus with Gav Cooper, of course, Mick Bradley, and the posh Cockney, Dave Pickerel. And right, now it's time that Gav did some real work. And the decision to leave the Central Midlands Alliance and join the Lincolnshire Football League, at the time people thought, well, what are they up to? I knew what I was up to, and it's proving successful. So, simple question, was it the correct decision?
Yes. Does that clear that one up?
You're going to have to talk a lot longer than that. We've got an hour to fill.
Yeah, it certainly was. I think sometimes you've got to be realistic, and people may say, they've took the easier route. Well, you could argue that point. I think it's certainly not an easier route, but what I would say is the Central Midlands has some big clubs with big budgets, and if you're going to be realistic, trying to get out of that division would have been incredibly tough. I've got good friends at Thorn that made a similar step to the Humber Prem for the same reason. In that Central Midlands, there's Doncaster City at the minute, and we've all seen what they've been doing, Dern and District. You know, there's three or four big clubs, but much bigger than us, in bigger catchment areas, that, you know, can get better players than us, if you like. No disservice to our lads, but that's the honest truth. It is always going to be difficult to compete with those teams. So we felt we definitely wasn't going to be any worse off making the move across the Lincolnshire League. And it's proved last season, finishing third, I think, or second or third, that was definitely more competitive at the top end. And we wanted to give ourselves the best opportunity, you know, of making the step up.
And you enjoy your football. When you're successful, the whole club enjoys the football. Everybody wants to come and be there on a Saturday afternoon and be part of it. Travelling, I would probably suggest, is a little bit better for you.
No, really, if I'm being honest. From Crowell, it's Central Midlands, is everything's down the motorway, M18. So if you look at it from mileage point of view, you'd go, oh yeah, Lincolnshire League's better. But once you come off, you know, the motorway M180, you know, and if you're not going to Grimsby, everything's an A road. So actually, time-wise, it's probably a little bit more arduous. You know, when you're going out to Wibberton and Sleaford, places like that, it can soon drag, put it that way, and traffic can be a lot harder as well.
Yeah, good point. But they don't do sort of four lanes in Lincolnshire, do they? They're still living in the past. And this, David, I think, you know, Thorne's done it, as we said, Crowell's done it, Cottingham have done it and have enjoyed a successful season. And I can see more and more teams finding a way out of the Central Midlands for that one valid reason, that they will not be able to compete with the big boys, that the Central Midlands do seem to somehow attract.
I think so. We've said all along, and people that have been involved with the Central Midlands over the years have said, they've always set a fairly high standard for facilities, and as a result, it has attracted some of the bigger clubs. When you see, as you say, some of the crowds that are going in at Dernan District and Doncaster, it's quite amazing. And you've only got to look at some of the names that they're signing in there. The players are going, Well, three internationals, wasn't it, from one game? I'm not quite sure how that satisfies the integrity of the competition, bringing them in for one game. But if they can afford to do that, and they are getting crowds of nearly a thousand for some games and decent stuff. And as you say, if you're on a more limited budget, it's not going to be easy for you guys. If anything, I've said the travelling is probably easier in the Central Midlands, because I was just thinking, you're not that far from Doncaster, really, are you? So straight away, you've got Thorne. Well, you would have had Thorne, but people like Harworth. The footprint going into South Yorkshire and North Derbyshire is a lot easier, I'm sure. But I don't know. You've still got people like Immingham to go and play, haven't you, and stuff like that. So you've
I think it's just the longer trips are a lot longer than in the Central Midlands. I think that's when it bites you on the backside a little bit. That's where it's caught up with us. Like you say, there's some plenty close enough, you know, Brigg, Immingham, Barton, Atfrod, even Kielby's not too bad. You know, the Lincoln ones aren't too bad. But like I say, when you're going out to Wibberton, Sleaford, I think we've been to Wibberton 3 times already this year, including the Cup. So it's kind of like, and I think we're in the Challenge Cup, you know, and I think they're one of the teams. So you can put your money on it that we'll be going there. Skegness away, we've already done that one twice already, so it'll definitely be one of them too. I can guarantee it won't be Brigg at home
or Morton Harrocks in the Cup, of course. That'll be the other one,
exactly. Yeah,
right. Well, Skegness is not close to anywhere, right? It was all about the FA Vars quarterfinals last Saturday. My four, that me being the football expert that I am, predicted one out of the four managed to win. That sums me up quite well. I think that was one more than Mr. Pickerel chose. But,
I think it was, yeah.
I won't go into that. But what he has done is put together a bit of a review for us.
All the local eyes were on Ashby Avenue as Lincoln United came up against the previous winners, Deal Town, for a place in the last four of the FA Vars. An early Jack McMenemy goal got the majority of the 922 singing, only for silence to fall just before the break as the Kent club hit back. One of the more ridiculous FA rules is that FA Vars matches go straight to penalties in the event of a draw at 90 minutes. And with the team still locked together, the lottery began. Both sides missed their first attempt. Lincoln held their nerve with the next four. As the last Deal attempt sailed over the bar, the local celebrations began. So, yes, congratulations to them there. That was an afternoon to remember, wasn't it?
It was, and that's the first one I got wrong.
Yes. In the other matches, Cornwall's dream of a Wembley day out ended with two second-half goals on the Essex coast. Cup favourites Worcester eased past the last remaining Northern team in front of the day's biggest crowd of 1,400. And a single first-half goal saw Romford make the final place despite losing both their captain and leading scorer through suspension. The two-legged semi-finals sees Great Wakering travel to Worcester and Lincoln United to Romford on Easter Saturday, with the return legs a week later. And let's be honest, that's about the furthest travel. That's about the furthest mileage you could get out of both games, to be honest, wasn't it?
I've given up on Vars now. I'm not interested in them.
Oh, right. Okay. Season's over.
Season's over now. Yeah. Can't think of any more teams.
No.
I really did think Falmouth would win at Great Wakering, and I'd got my trip to Wembley all sorted out. He and Hughes doesn't know yet, but he would have sorted it out. But it's all there, and now it's gone up in ashes. It's all gone down in ashes, whatever it is. But never mind. All we can say now is good luck to Lincoln. But I honestly cannot see any further than Worcester City, I'm afraid.
Sadly, I think you're probably right there. But fingers crossed, Lincoln United will do it.
Let's hope Lincoln can do it. That would be fantastic. Right, question two for Gavin. This is the one that everybody's waiting for. We'll start with ground improvements and then we'll go on to the pyramid.
Yeah, we saw some impressive pictures a few weeks back of you've got the floodlights in place, but the rumours are flying around at the moment that you've probably failed the ground grading. Certainly 2023. It failed, and there's a suggestion that it's not quite up to scratch this time.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's plenty of rumours going around. We've kept our heads down a little bit for certain reasons. It's something I haven't spoke about. I knew this was coming tonight, but we're more than happy to kind of divulge what's going on because it'll become common knowledge soon. Yeah, so it's kind of not been our fault in a nutshell. It started back in October, September when the floodlights started. Basically, the way with the amount of rain we had, it forced the floodlights back 2-3 months. Every time they dug the trenches, you know, they're just full of water, so that just pushed everything back. And the way it works in terms of the funding, you can't apply for the next pot of funding until that particular project has been completed, which didn't end up completing until January. So it's literally killed us 3 months. So that was the first issue. We've managed to cobble on and get on with all the other things we needed to do. And then now we've had another issue, which is we've inputted planning permission for the path, the stand and bait, well, those two things. And when we actually sent off the planning, within the diagram was a fence, which had no reason to be on there, just other than to smarten the picture up, basically. And that, in effect, what that did is that alerted Sport England. So, and the reason for that is our ground is actually a playing field, Crawley Inland playing field. So it's not strictly our ground. We've got a long term lease on it. So Sport England were obliged to object to the planning in regards to the fact that it's a playing field and we was in effect cutting off land for the general public to use. Now, Sport and England have been fantastic. They've been honest to say, look, we just need to see dimensions of the rest of the other five pitches on there, access and everything else, that they're more than happy with it. But they're like, their words were, we're obliged to do this. So that's kind of obviously caused the next problem. What has happened with that scenario, though, that has allowed us to apply for special dispensation to allow us more time. So yes, in a nutshell, you could say we have failed the ground grading in terms of the 31st of March. I won't give my opinion on that deadline date, but I think many people are not particularly happy with that deadline date.
It's probably the same as our opinion, yeah.
I just think it's completely pointless. I don't understand it. It makes no sense. But anyway, that's what I'll say on that. So it's allowed us to apply for that special dispensation. We have got an agreement in place with a local club to us. We've got a heads of term in place in terms of a ground share, which will allow us to play on their ground. The agreement's, you know, in place for the majority of the season, but the reality of that is the work will be done by August. So, you know, we have got things in place to satisfy the FA and the Northern Counties. The Northern Counties have visited and they're more than happy with what we're doing. They've seen all the plans, seen all the funding bids, they've seen everything. So, it's not like we've got nothing to hide. We've showed everything, you know, to the powers that be, what we're doing and what the plans are. We're certainly not playing at it. We've got no reason to do that. It wouldn't achieve anything. We've got things in place to satisfy everyone to allow us to make the step. Should they allow, you know, should the FA, the ground grading team, you know, are happy with, basically, if they're happy with that. Was that what you were expecting, or was it?
No, it wasn't. I didn't know what to expect because I couldn't think what the problem was, because most clubs' problems are floodlights. Well, that's obviously sorted out. So I was beginning to... Everybody goes on these sites and are telling me that it's Appleby Frodingham, which is the only team from Lincolnshire that look like they stand a chance. And I'm thinking to myself, well, that's not as I read it from the outset.
I think people would be fair saying that. You know, I think because Appleby Frodingham's team's, yeah, sorry, ground is good to go. So that'd be a fair presumption to have. We're just trying to make sure, you know, we do everything right at our end and make sure everyone knows. Obviously, naturally, we haven't been particularly vocal about that. We've had various people have been on the phone from all corners of the country asking about the situation. Naturally, we've had to keep it under wraps to get everything in place where we want it to be.
The North East Counties, I would hope, are working with you.
Yes. Yep. They've been great. The support's been fantastic. With the local club we've agreed with, you know, they've both been good. We can't fault them one bit. The support we've had, I must admit, from everybody, really, from the FA, you know, they've all been great. I think because because we've been so professional in what we're trying to do, I think they you know, they realise we're trying to do it right. I think our first probably mistake was the floodlights, as daft as that sounds, because that's the only thing you get grace with, going up a step, which I find bonkers. You know, you can have everything else in place other than floodlights. And, you know, so looking back, we would have done it the other way around, but who would have thought that? You know, so that's probably where we went wrong 3 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, trying to pre-guess the FA and trying to work to win their ever-moving parameters, and I do realise that you have a day job and probably things are a bit... you can't say what David and I can say, and I'll never expect you to say it, but David and I can have a talk about the 31st of March deadlines. For these... I'm not being rude to them, David, but these playing field clubs suddenly coming into the pyramid where they need to fence off the pitch, they need to have a dedicated walkway instead of the players coming out together and having a chat as they do. Yeah, and lots of things, you know, like a toilet every five yards and 14 turnstiles and all ridiculous things like that. All in place, realistically, before you even know that you're leaving that league. The expense is remarkable and the stupidity from the FA is just as remarkable.
Yeah, I can only agree with that, because as we've seen, some clubs have been refused the promotion on not being up to date by the 31st. Other clubs have been allowed to carry on playing. And in one case, one club went, was it two seasons? And then after the end of the second season, then basically flicking two fingers and say, well, we haven't got the money, we're not going to do it, have been relegated. And there's enough clubs going to the wall at the moment without whoever spending £10,000-£15,000 bringing the ground up to standard to suddenly find out a couple of seconds before the end of the season they're not going to go up anyway.
I just find it. I find it remarkable. You don't get your money back that you have to pay for when you apply if you don't get in for no reason, for no valid reason. But I'm afraid it doesn't surprise me in any way, shape, or form. Gav,
There is one point I just want to make, that the system has changed this year in terms of the ground grading. So previous to this year, it used to be you'd speak to the league above and they'd come and do your ground grading. Now this year, it's done by the FA, by almost like a central system. So what they're doing is they're going around every single ground and grading that ground. So when they come and did our ground grading, one question was, have you got a VAR? And your jaw hits the floor. But there was, you wouldn't believe some of the questions we was asked. You know, it was crazy. So whereas before clubs would work with, the league had worked with clubs and go, right, you need to have this in place and that in place, that's fine, you can come in. Now it's up to somebody, I dare say, sat in Wembley, 4 hours away from my ground, making a decision, which, like you've alluded to, for me, the system isn't built towards working with clubs that are only trying to better themselves to get to the next step.
No. We are very friendly on this show with two ground grading officers from two different leagues in two different parts of the country, and I won't mention any names whatsoever, but I do know they totally agree with your comments, and they put them over to us an awful lot stronger than what you put them over as well. Again, it's the FA digging themselves into a hole. What people have got to realise... that the FA do not give a jot about clubs that we love at this level. Not a jot. If there wasn't a round, it wouldn't bother the FA one iota. It really wouldn't. And they can argue that point as long as they like. You're listening to Grassroots Plus, proudly sponsored by Gusto Homes.
The Groundhop season is in full swing, with the Scottish Hop taking place this weekend. 6 matches over 3 days, based around West Lothian. Starting on Friday at Armadale, 4 matches on Sunday morning, and ending at Whitburn on Sunday lunchtime.
Yeah, that's a misprint. It's 4 matches on Saturday.
That's a yes. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's 4 matches on Saturday.
Nice part of the world to go and watch football.
I haven't got a clue where it is. I think it's between Glasgow and Edinburgh, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of. So not quite into the sort of the central belt, but sort of south of that bit, sort of just south of Glasgow.
So let's see how many turn up to the Scottish Hop. And then I think at Easter, it is the big one, isn't it? It's the South West.
Yes.
I say it's the big one. I'm bound to say it's the big one, aren't I? But in my world, it's the big one.
Yes, it will. It would be, wouldn't it?
Of course. Right. Big question time, David. Last week, it was all about the weather. Did you get many responses?
Not as many as the photos, but we got some very good ones. And I will have a look over the weekend and get in touch with somebody and see if they want to take a Zoom call from me and talk about it. But beauty time photography. Yeah, she said, I don't notice the wet or cold anymore, to be honest. But there is a game from 2019 that lives rent-free in my head after a player lost the plot. I'm talking off the scale. It could have been, he could have been arrested. He absolutely lost it. So that's not really one about the weather. Andy Daking. The Central Midlands Groundhog Day in and around Nottingham in March 2004, when 200 or so obsessives watched five games in a day on one of the windiest days I've ever endured while I've been watching football. At one point, the roof blew off a nearby golf centre and a gazebo disappeared. Steve Mack, my first trip abroad post-pandemic was to Spain. I took the chance to see a severe home game. Nothing in the forecast suggested torrential rain. Although the locals did go prepared, I didn't. I was soaked to the skin. Two-hour train home journey afterwards in wet clothes. That was horrible. Rob Hornby, Hucknall v. Nettleham, League Cup semi-final. Awful first 20 minutes and the temperature was falling. The police entered the ground to ask if we'd like to earn a tenner. So we went in a van to the police station for an ID parade. The guy's solicitor looked at me and he said, I look too much like your client. So I was removed and put in another parade, says Rob. So he actually got 20 quid. The police dropped him back at Hucknall's ground, where it was still nil-nil and it had gone into extra time. The pitch was now hard white with frost as it was -5. Hucknall scored in the 119th minute and saved them all the bother of having to watch the penalties.
Do you think we can get some T-shirts printed then? Free the Rob Hornby one?
Yeah, absolutely. As I say, he perhaps ought to have been a policeman if he's helping them with their inquiries like that, but never mind.
Right then. Don't they have to finish the inquiries in 48 hours?
I think so. But no, yeah, for an identity parade, it's quite an easy way to earn money. You just don't want to get your finger pointed at you too many times, do you? Just in case. Liam Kent, he said, Welbeck away. We won 12-0, but absolutely it hammered down all through the game and there was no hard standing. It turned into a real mud bath. There was about three of us sheltered under one umbrella. Darren Stevens, two extremes in the same season. Both were horrible. August 2003, Wimbledon 3, Crewe 1. It was the hottest day ever in London at that time, plus 36 degrees. And then in February the following year, Vålerenga 1, Newcastle 1. It was -8 degrees C or lower in Oslo, a 44 centigrade gap between the two temperatures. And to finish us off, Max from Emma's Ground Guide. My dad always tells the story of Crewe Alex away at Leeds on New Year's Day 2005. It was snowing directly into the way end. And as an 8-year-old, I turned blue and had to go down into the concourse to warm up. Crewe won, which puts us into the championship playoffs. What could have been? So, yeah, there were some good stories there. Only Rob could manage to angle that one, couldn't he?
Yeah, he could. Yeah. So extend the show, I suppose, if you're gonna go for him. Right, I'm not sure I'm even going to get answers for this week's, but it's something that I'm busy reading Stuart Broad's latest book, Broadly Speaking.
Yes,
and we've got to a stage where through illness and one thing and another, he didn't think he was going to make it as a cricketer because he was being basically ignored by Leicestershire as a bowler because your dad can bat, so you must be a batsman. Anyway, that sort of thing. And that got me thinking, actually, who was the one player that you've seen that you thought could make it, but just for whatever reason, didn't? And I'll give you a scenario, if you like, on this one. I'm going back to the late 70s, early 80s now at what was Winter Simpsons in the Knots of Lights, when the Knots of Lights was massively competitive. We had a winger, lived in a village just outside of town, as a farmer actually, called Dave Brackenbury. Hardly anybody's heard of him. We found him playing Sunday morning football and he played over two seasons, probably about 40-something games for the club. Wonderfully tricky winger. He'd got everything. He could score goals. He'd got the pace. He could cross the ball. He had got the lot. But for Dave, farming was the first thing. It was a family farm, I understand that. Farming was first. His beautiful girlfriend was second. And football was third. So if there was nothing to do on the farm, or he wasn't going out with her for the day, he would play football. And that's really not good enough, because he's got a guarantee being there every week. And Dave just drifted off. I'm sad to say he got killed in the car crash a little bit, not many years later, because he was a lovely, lovely lad. He really was. So that's mine, Dave Brackenbury, the one player that we all thought could go on to a higher level, and he didn't. Gav, have you've seen lots and lots of football. You will see lots and lots of players. And I'm going to throw this one on you because it's not in the script, so to speak. But you must have seen people that have got the ability, but for one reason or another, they've drifted away.
Yeah, there's been plenty. And I think a lot of them fall into the same bracket. You just spoke about that gentleman there. That some people just now, it doesn't matter how much ability they've got, doesn't matter how many goals they score, or how well they do, how many awards they get, they've just not got it within them to have that little bit of, I don't know, heart to go on and kick on. Some people just aren't bothered, which is, for me, my game was probably based on heart rather than ability, incredibly frustrating. I'd love to have an ounce of ability some of the lads have played with, but I think there's a couple of lads when I spent 4 or 5 seasons at Winterton, we had a couple of lads who'd playing like what's probably known as the number 10 role now. In them days, it was more of just a free role. Us lads in midfield used to run around and give it to them, where the two lads, one called Danny Barlow and one called Danny Frost, who both Barnsley lads, mad as a box of frogs, both of them, but why did they have some ability? They could, you know, our game was about working hard, stopping the ball going in the net and literally giving it to them two, or the centre forward, Liam Wilkin, to score our goals for us. But they just didn't, you could tell they weren't, you know, they tried, don't get me wrong, they tried the best on a Saturday afternoon for us, but without a doubt, they could have gone on and played much higher and, you know, possibly made it as professionals. But yeah, just didn't have it in them. I think, you know, it's frustrating, like I say, for me as well, like who wanted an ounce of their ability.
Yeah, that's the real frustrating point, when the lesser mortals sort of stand there and say, you know, come on, you've got it, just give us that extra little bit, and they don't. So Dave, I don't know if you can put that into words for me to put out on social media.
I'll see if I can make it sensible in a 120 characters I've got to do it in.
I'm sort of dropping it on you a little bit, but I just had this reading that book and it just got me thinking, and that's always difficult when that happens.
Yeah, I'll give it a go.
Okay, good man. Right, there's nothing like a County Cup final, is it? Dave found that out last year. His team got to a County Cup final for the first time in 120 something years, and they actually won it. So there's nothing like the County Cup final, and that is what Gav has got to look forward to. So we'll talk County Cup finals now, and we'll also talk semi-finals. But Dave, amazing thing for me is that the county competition above the one that Gav's playing in, or Gav's team are playing in, is taking place at Boston United, while Gav's final is...
Yeah, you've got a trip to the LNER Stadium, or in old money, which I am, it's Sinsel Bank, and you've got a match against Wibberton. We thought last year we were going to Meadow Lane to play ours, and at the last minute, Notts County decided they couldn't play, was it 2 games in 14 days or something on that pitch, so we ended up going to Eastwood, which it served well on the time, but it would have been nice to have lifted the trophy at Meadow Lane. So yes, LNER Stadium, here you come.
Yeah, we're delighted. More so, the travelling out, we was expecting probably, I think the last couple of years, I think it's been over at Boston. So that would have been a hell of a trek for us, especially if it was a Friday night. So first things first, we're delighted. It's obviously Lincoln, which is a little bit more central for both clubs. But yeah, to play at Sinsel Bank, it'll be LNER, sorry. I've talked modern times. So, the lads are really, really looking forward to it. as you expect them to do, especially the way we did it in the semi final.
So let's go back to the semi final because it I think it got our, if not our game of the month, our game of the week, our game of the season, or whatever, because it literally had everything. But on paper, it wasn't even a difficult game for you.
Well, you say that we actually went there the week before to play them in the league.
Well, they are 11th.
Yeah, but you know, that's what made it so difficult, because when you play them the week before, you learn a little bit about each other and, you know, things like that. And we beat them the week before 4-1, I think it was. And it wasn't a straightforward game by any stretch of the imagination. And the pitch we played on wasn't great that day. And we knew there was forecast a bit more rain in the week. So we knew we was going to get a pitch that wasn't going to be any better, to say the least. And it definitely wasn't. But fair play to the ground staff there. I know the gentleman there had really done some fantastic work to even get the game on. But yeah... And,
can I just stop you before you go to the game? Two things. Yes, I agree with you. As groundsmen go, he does work really hard. But there's two games at the Vertigo Stadium that day. Sure, they're not on the same pitch.
No, we was on the back one.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so it was on the back one the week before, when actually there wasn't a game on that first team pitch, if you like. The manager was telling me they don't often get to play on it, which is unfortunate. You know, so yeah, we was out on the back pitch.
I don't think, to be honest, I would be surprised if this season that main pitch was capable of taking a game every week, as when we went to play on it, and that was, what, December, David?
Yeah.
It was soaking. Absolutely. Anyway, that's by the by. So, a cup semi-final that had everything.
Yeah, I think that's an understatement of a lifetime. I've never been a part of a game like that before. I've never been exhausted after a game without playing. But yeah, certainly that game was. We made a really good start to the game, got in front after probably 10 minutes, and then we lose our centre forward, who's top goal scorer in the league by quite a stretch. So you're thinking, oh, goodness me. So that was after about 25 minutes. And then a minute later, we've given a penalty away, and then they scored two more. So you're 3-1 at half time, thinking, goodness me, 3-1 down, away from home. Your top goal scorer is not on the pitch anymore. What are we going to do? But to be fair, we come up, myself and Ben Simpson, my assistant, come up with a very clear plan for the lads of how we wanted to affect the game and what we wanted to do. We was very brave in what we you know, attacking wise and what we wanted to do. Gave the lads simple plans, and to be fair, it paid off. I think, you know, from there on in, we was the best team. I think coming onto the pitch before the game, we didn't think it'd play into our favour, because, you know, we do try and play a little bit, but I think eventually what happened was, because the pitch was that bad, it actually slowed the game down. So being down to 10 wasn't as much as, you know, a leg up for them as what it could have been. So again, further, you know, and then we've gone 3-2, deservedly so. We've had their keepers made two or three great saves, so the goal was coming. And then we've nicked one maybe 5 minutes to go to push it to extra time, and you think, right, we're in this. We was more than happy with where we was. It's really fancied us. I think they've gone 4-3, and you're thinking it was one of them that it got set back to him. The lads had a shot, and he's kind of not got it right at all, and it's gone all the way across the box, and the wingers ran in and tapped it in, and then you think, that's a stroke of luck. What they've got, is it our day? But fair play to the lads. We've gone straight down the other end and pretty much scored from kickoff to go 4-4. You think, right, come on, lads. You know, we're set now. 2 minutes later, the centre-back, who's already on a yellow, runs across, and the tackle he makes, which is, even now, I think, I put it down to a tired mind, even though he's not the brightest, bless him. I don't know why he makes the tackle.
That's why the centre-half.
Well, you could say that. None more so than this lad. He makes the tackle, and you think, oh, nine men. Well, we didn't change. We thought, right, 3-4-1, we ended up. And then we've gone in the first half of extra time. We've scored after 2 minutes. Thinking, right, hold on, boys. We held on until the last kick, and the lad's gone through. It's bobbled up. It fell perfect for him, and the keeper's got a hand on it to it, but it was a great strike, crossbar and in, you think, penalties. And then you think, naturally, you think, the team that's conceded late often are the team that lose on penalties. But thankfully, the keepers at Beadle made two good saves early and then saved the last one. And naturally delighted, but yeah, exhausted without playing.
I mean, I read it as one hell of a game. David, the only thing I've noted down from what Gav just said, after 25 minutes of the match, my top goal scorer, the league's top goal scorer, got sent off. And I thought, goodness me. Yeah, I bet he did.
Yeah. I don't know. We've had this discussion several times. Whenever the team we're playing goes down to 10 men, we're like, oh, hang on. We don't seem to do so well. Often the guys with 10 men seem to play better. And I guess if you've been watching the opposition, you know, you say you've learned a bit about them and suddenly you're the way you've changed, it throws them off equally as much as it throws you off, I guess.
Yeah, and what I think one massive thing this year is it's rolling subs in the County Cup. So for a team down to 10 men, that was a massive plus for us as well, because we could keep lads fairly fresh. You know, you can only make five, I think there's five windows. You can't just do it constantly. You only get five windows. But that certainly was a benefit to us as well, to keep rolling lads on and off, to keep them fresh, or fresh as they may be.
Yeah. I've not seen that before. That's a good concept. That's an interesting concept.
It's certainly been useful for us. I've lauded our boys this year, because from a squad point of view, there's been a number of times late in games, we've maybe been 2-1 up, 3-1 up, and we've ended up winning 5 or 6-1 because the lads coming on the pitch and not weakening the team at all. They've come on and made impacts. We've got a gentleman, Gareth Parkin, who does our programme and various different bits, who, you know, stats of Crowe from years and years ago. And I recently asked him this week how many times players have come on to score goals. And unfortunately, I can't give you the answer, but he will be telling me at the weekend how long that's happened. But it has happened a fair bit.
So you've a week on Friday, this goes out obviously on Fridays, in a week's time, you'll be on the coach on the way to Lincoln. All suited and booted, are you?
No. I'm trying to keep the game as normal as possible, to be honest. I've been in the position before of going suited and booted and again getting rolled 6-0 in a cup final, so it's not something I really want to do. I'm not saying that was the reason we got beat, but I kind of stuck in my mind. But no, it sounds cliche, but I do want to keep things as normal as possible. And to be really honest, we are going on a bus, and the club almost forced me to do that because we go in cars to games, and I wanted to do that as well. But the club have kind of pulled rank and gone, no, we'll get you a bus. Players can go on a bus. Supports can go on another one. So fair enough. But yeah,
it's more than risky, isn't it, on a Friday night going in cars? Because all you need is one car to go astray for some stupid reason.
Yeah.
And you're playing Wimbledon now. Again, on paper, you're the favourites. You've already beaten them on their ground. You've beaten their A team on their ground as well. But you've still got to. They've still got to come up to Windsor Park. But the one thing Wimbledon do have in their favour is they've been to this cup final before.
And that's probably why I wouldn't have us as favourites, to be honest, Mick. I think experience can go a long way. So I'd have them as favourites. They've been there and done it numerous times, won it and lost it. And we never have. Last time we were there, it was 1972. Unfortunately, I wasn't around for that event. But yeah, it's a new experience for us. You could probably see that as a positive, because previous times we haven't got any scar tissue, if you like, if you know what I'm getting at. The boys can go and almost enjoy it, and for me, and that'll be the message to the lads: go and enjoy it. But as everyone knows, cup finals are a place for losers, so we're going to, like any, you know, you'd expect, we want to go and win the game, we want to go and play well, you know.
I'm not sure that cup finals are a place for enjoyment, even. You won't enjoy it, will you?
No, definitely not. I'd much rather be a player.
Yeah.
You know, being a player, you can impact it, can't you? A lot more than you can a manager. And standing on the touch lines. I'm not a great... I can't really sit still. I love the odd game when I'll sit down and relax a little bit, but I'm not for one. I move around quite a lot. I'm not saying I jump around, I don't. I just can't stand still. I'm not the type to do that.
So there you go. Next Friday night at the Elliniar Stadium or Central Bank or whatever you want to call it, but it's Lincoln City's ground. Wimbledon versus Crowell Colts in what could, and I think very well will be, one heck of a game. So we wish you the best of luck because we haven't talked to Wimbledon, so we like you the best.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
We wish you the best of luck. Don't we, Mr. Pickerel?
We do indeed. No doubt. Lincolnshire Non-League Radio will be... as they are unbiased and shouting Wimbledon all through the night, but it'll be a great night out, I'm sure, and go and enjoy it if you can. Personally speaking, I enjoyed last season 2 seconds after the final whistle went, and I realised we'd won. And at that point, yeah, it's great, but it was quite last few minutes was quite fraught, wasn't it, Mick? Could we hold on to that lead?
Yeah, the one we kept trying to give away. Yes, it was quite fraught. And anybody says, "I hope you enjoyed it." No. We didn't, but we won. So let's just hope Crowell Colts can win as well. Right, time to talk railways and a bit of football because that's what we do. We're taking you on this little journey through the railway lines of Lincolnshire and also the football clubs along those railway lines in Lincolnshire. That's how we tie the two together. David's got his red trousers and his yellow jacket on. So over to him. I'm not sure where we left you last time, David. Somewhere around Boston, I'd have thought.
We're at Boston, yeah. You were waxing lyrical about the improvements that are going on. From Boston, our train is only 19 miles from its final destination of Skegness. We leave the town heading northeast on the dead straight track across the Lincolnshire Fens until we reach the site of Firsby South Junction. The route is single track as far as Sibsey and has no less than 14 level crossings. The village had a football team in Division 1 of the Boston League until the 2022-23 season. Thanks to the butchery of car-biased Minister of Transport Ernest Marples and his henchman Richard Beeching, the railways of North Lincolnshire were decimated. While the main line to Louth and Grimsby to the west as well, at Firsby Station itself were lost in the infamous report from the line from Boston and the branch to Skegness were somehow saved despite them being recommended for closure, which is why you've got that funny great big bend there, haven't you? Sort of.
It's about the only 90-degree bend on that. It's a ridiculously tight. Yeah. I think it's the tightest bend on the whole of the English rail system. You did notice what my opinion of Beeching and Marples was.
Yes, yeah, you'd got a different sort of line of work for them there. As you can imagine, football is difficult to find in these rural backwaters, but 5 miles west from Firsby, the railway line closed in 1939, is the town of Spilsby and a club with a long history. Formed in 1870, the club reached the FA Cup for the first time in 1880-81 season, and they lost 7-0 to Stafford Road of Wolverhampton. The match had to be played at Trent Bridge as Spilsby's ground was flooded. However, as Notts County were playing a prestigious friendly against Queen's Park at the Castle Ground at the same time, the attendance was about a dozen. 1882 saw the high-scoring game in Sheffield Wednesday's history against Spilsby in 1882 when the Steelmen beat the Magpies of Spilsby 12-2 in the first round. They did, however, find success in the Lincolnshire Senior Cup, winning the first three competitions from 1882 to 1884. Today, the club play in the Boston League, winning the title in 2018-2019. They applied to enter the Step 7 Lincolnshire Premier League for the 2023-24 season, but they were overlooked in favour of the Louth Town Reserves.
And they actually won it last season, and they're going to win it again this season, as well as probably about half a dozen cups that league seem to play for as well. I hope they apply for the Boston League again, or even the Lincolnshire League, because they should do. Gav, do you know anything about Spilsby Town Football Club?
Yeah, they applied last year. They didn't get a vote to get in, unfortunately. I think the main reason they didn't get in because the change in facilities they spoke about weren't fantastic. I'm not sure if they've done any more work this year. I can imagine if they got knocked back on that last year, they've probably done that this year. But I can only guess. I wouldn't know. I'd expect them to have done a bit more work and apply again.
That's right. They've got to make the effort to get up there. It's all right. You get these clubs, don't you, that, you know, got an absolute trophy full of cabinets, but you're thinking, you know, make a big effort to take the next step and see if you've still got a trophy full of cabinets when you play a high standard.
That's a brilliant Freudian slip twice, that a trophy full of cabinets.
Okay. Yes, well, I'm glad you're listening.
Yeah, twice you said it as well.
Well, you see, that's what happens when you go off script, isn't it?
It does, yeah.
Okay, what's next for Coles? Because we don't know, do we, Gavin, really?
I suppose not, no. Obviously, what's next is everything going on with the ground and the next step. And yeah, you're right, we don't particularly know. All we know is we're working towards getting it right. Worst case scenario for us is, and this is worst case that we don't want to be in, is that we're in the Lincolnshire League next year with a ground that is absolutely on the money, ready to go. So we know it's done and dusted for the following season, but don't get me wrong, it's not somewhere we want to be. We're trying to do everything we can to make sure we're ticking every box, you know, to be allowed to make the step up. It's not just the ground though. There's a long way to go in the league. You know, I think maybe got 7 or 8 weeks left of some big games to come. You know, it's not going to be straightforward at all. So it's not a foregone conclusion at all. We've got to carry on winning games of football. And I think, you know, but we lost the other night and the last team to beat us was Nettleham in end of October. So we've certainly been on a good run. So if we can continue in the same vein, you know, and we've only been beat by, actually, those two games, the top team in the league, we shouldn't go too far wrong, but we've still got to play Wibberton at home. We've got to play at Fraud on Tuesday night. We've got to play Rushton's away. There's still some big games. We've got to go and get some points.
Okay, Mr. Manager. We heard right at the top of the show about Lincoln United, and I'm in the opinion that Lincoln United have took the foot well and truly off the gas in the league while they concentrate on the Vars. And yeah, that's fair comment. You don't go to Wembley or have a chance going to Wembley every season, and they've done enough to get in the playoffs. I think you've done enough to keep above Appleby Frodingham, but that's the team that you are playing, but you're also playing them 3 days before you play a cup final.
Yeah, not ideal, to say the least. I think I'm a little bit, I thought this is one thing I think with the league, I think when you're playing, we've got to play Saturday, Tuesday, Friday. Not ideal for me. There's long enough left in the season to move games around. It is what it is. We can't moan about it, but it's one of them things I think a bit of support would have been nice with it. Like I say, but it is what it is. I can't moan too much, but it would have been nice for a bit of support. It's team selection is going to be difficult. There's no two ways about it. I don't know which I've got at the moment in time. I don't really have a clue which way we're going to go. It's very cliche, but we've been pretty much, and it's like almost like an in-house joke now in the changing room that it's literally one game at a time. So the only game I'm fussed about at the minute is Saturday, and that's big development at home. There's no point in my mind at this point trying to make plans for Tuesday or Friday, because like I learned on Tuesday, someone could get injured, someone could get sent off, and then everything can change. So I'm literally worrying about Saturday now. One thing we have got is we've got a couple of lads that are cup tied for the final, unfortunately. So that naturally, you know, I'd expect them to be involved in Saturday and Tuesday. I've got to think about that and you've got to be clever and a little bit shrewd that I've got to be aware of that. You know, it wouldn't be worth risking other lads, I don't think, for the Friday, but it's a balancing act because that game on Tuesday night's a big game. So it's not like you can mix it up. But one thing, like I said earlier, is we've got a fantastic squad of players. I've got 21 players available for Saturday, which tells you what the lads are all about. It's like after a loss in midweek, it's often some players can go hiding and all of a sudden you've gone from 16 available to 12. Whereas this group of lads have been fantastic. So to have 21 available is great, which I've said to them already is testament to their attitudes. So unfortunately, I'm going to have to leave some lads out, but then we'll change it up on Tuesday again and then we'll go with a clear plan like we do in every other game of how we think we can win the game, you know, one game at a time.
And what's the name of the league's top scorer then?
Liam Snow.
Okay, I'm just noting that down because when I look at the team sheets on whenever they come up on thing, I'll have a little bet with Dave after the show to which game he doesn't play in.
Well, it's been a strange one because it was his first game back from suspension on Tuesday evening after his ban. He got a 3-game ban for the sending off in the semi-final. So he played on Tuesday. He's the most natural. I was probably talking about people earlier about lads could go on and progress. You know, he is naturally he's probably the best goal scorer I've worked with. To give you a clue about Liam, he should probably stop playing football when he was 14. He started up again last year at 22, 23 in the local league, scored nearly 100 goals in Scunthorpe local division. So obviously he's on the radar straight away. And we've brought him in this year and he is a natural out-and-out goal scorer. Naturally, there's other parts of his game he could improve on. He knows that. He's incredibly receptive to what we speak to him about, and he only wants to get better. And the main thing about him is he's a team player. You don't often get that with strikers. Often they'll stand at the top of the pitch and wait for the ball, where he won't. He doesn't mind doing the side of the game, which is probably why he gets himself sent off, because he's got in an area of the pitch he probably shouldn't be in as a striker. He's dropped in midfield to try and win the ball. Gets the type of lad he is. So we're thankful he's back. You can have your bets if he'll play Saturday, Tuesday, or neither, or one. That's up to you.
Yeah, which what we said about centre-halves thinking about what they're going to do. Centre-forwards having the ability to tackle is another one of those footballisms, isn't it?
I didn't say he had ability to tackle. I said that he doesn't mind tackling. The very different things.
Yeah, but you're polite. Okay, I mean, what about the junior section up there at Crow? I mean, I take it they're all coming to cheer you on because they, from what you told us last time, they are an integral part of the club.
Oh, certainly, without a doubt, a community club like we are, we've got a long pathway in place. I still have the pleasure of doing the 4 to 6 year olds, which is a way of getting the kids in the club. I think last time I spoke to you, I was just about to start running a team where my daughter now plays for the under eights. So. We're all the way from under sevens all the way up to 16s, and then we've got the development team as well, which you actually play in the central Midlands reserve, one of the division ones. So we've got a full pathway for the lads to come all the way through and make it towards the first team. One other area we're looking at is the under 21s midweek league. I think there's one over like South Yorkshire kind of region, so that's an area now we've got floodlights, we can legitimately look to put a team in. Whether or not that'll come this year or next year, we don't know. But we're making steps to making sure there's a pathway for all these players to come through, and head towards the first team. And naturally, like any club at any level, if you can bring homegrown players in, it means a lot to the local community. You get the buy-in from the local community when you've got local players playing. Obviously, not always, that doesn't always go hand in hand with good performances. So, we're fully aware and all the coaches are aware that we need to be doing things right. We need to be bringing the players on right and giving them the best opportunity to progress and become good players to play in our first team.
Good stuff. David, we do this annual guessing game thing that we've got going, and it changes pretty much by the hour, but between us, we managed to cobble together what we think's happened this week.
Well, it's expected that a total of 996 teams will make up next season's non-league pyramid, with 320 of them playing at Step 5 and 340 in Step 6. The big change is Step 4, up 16 from this season with the same amount of divisions. In the levels we concentrate on, 16 sides will come down from Step 4, while 32 will go in the other direction. 16 will be relegated to Step 6, replaced by 32 from Step 6 coming in opposite direction. Then you go into the realms of fantasy, as Captain Mannery would say. In Step 6, the bottom three are liable for relegation, up to 51, but it will be significantly less. With up to 49 will be coming from You've put RFLs here, and I'm trying to think what we meant by RFLs.
Regional feeder leagues.
Yes, that's right. And say there's so many unknowns with that, isn't there, depending on who passes?
Nobody's got an absolute clue. I mean, I've been told all this year only one from each division will go down. Now they're saying it's could be. I think they're just edging the bets and it will be one, but nobody knows.
No. Assuming it's Sherwood Colliery and Lincoln United who are promoted from the UCL North, we expect them to go into the Northern Premier East. And if the positions in that Step 4 division stay the same with the remaining UCL teams, they could be looking forward to trips to Grantham Town and Gresley Rovers next season. If Pinchbeck finish bottom, they look likely to join Holbeck in the Eastern Counties.
Holbeach.
To join Holbeach in these Eastern Counties as the UCL Step 6 division concentrates on Nottinghamshire, Derbyshire and east of Leicester City Centre. It's also expected that the UCL North goes back to 20 teams, and that could mean Retford United joining the two promoted Step 6 sides. Nationally, the big unanswered question is, what will happen to the four sides that dropped out of the pyramid during this season? Three of which, Mask United, Hamworth United and Nuneaton, are known to be have reapplied, but nobody seems to know what's happened at Norwich United. They have tipped over the edge, haven't they?
Yeah, they have completely. Well, the under-21s are still there, But those other three, I would suggest the FA will sort of steamroll over everybody else to get them back in, because that's how the FA tends to work. But the thing that is really getting to annoy me now is that Pinchbeck will pretty much, if they do go down, join Holbeach, having to travel to Norfolk all the time.
Ipswich,
as the UCL Step 6 division is pretty much the East Midlands Counties League as 4 years ago.
I've never understood that, because the East Midlands Counties League did exactly what it said on the tin, on its name, and it was a competitive league. Nobody travelled more than about 40 miles to any game, even if you're on the fringes. And four seasons ago, that's it, last season, and it had gone.
You see, what is happening is that Step 6 football in parts of Leicestershire, Northamptonshire, is being pushed towards the South Midlands and the Midland League now, because there's no room for it in the United Counties one. I don't know. I really don't know. It's I'm just glad I don't follow a team that's on the border of anywhere. I think if Crowell do go up, you're going to the Northeast Counties. That's fairly absolutely certain. Even the FA's geography can't make a mess of that one. But you know, a team like Retford United, the good money seems to have them in the United Counties League, while Retford FC will stop in the Northeast Counties League. I really do get a little bit flummoxed on that one. Anyway, let's talk about my most memorable match, David.
Yes, you may have already mentioned this tonight, Gav. I don't know. Either as a player or a spectator, and it's not necessarily a present time, what is your most memorable match that you can recall, the one that keeps you awake at night?
The one that keeps me awake, actually, it's a little bit off. It's not football as such, it's actually futsal. So I work for the Iron Foundation, and part of it, we do a football and education scholarship programme. Now, in 2014, I think it was, 15, it was a futsal and education programme. And we actually got to the Nationals Finals, which was filmed the whole way through by Soccer AM at the time. It was on Soccer AM every morning, every Saturday morning. And we got to the final, we got to the semi-finals, which was held at the Copy Box at the Olympic Park. We played Sheffield United in the semi-final. We'd beaten them in the league 8-1 and 10-1. And we was 3-2 up in extra time. And I managed to put on what I thought was my best five players for the second half of extra time. And we got beat 5-3. When, you know, especially because you're with a group of boys who were 17, you know, you can see how devastated there was. And we literally had it in the palm of our hand to make the final, which we knew we was going to play Reading in the final, who we'd actually beaten in the previous round.
it was like a league format. We'd actually beaten Reading in the previous round at St George's Park, so we knew we had a really good chance of being what was known as a Soccer AM Cup winner. So that, and that still lives with me now. And often the video pops up from YouTube, and it's one of them I'll watch through my fingers, because it's not pleasurable. And like I say, because of them boys, I know how disappointed and the way it's hard to take.
Yeah, and it's for them, isn't it? And it's I know somebody has to lose, but it doesn't make it any easier when you're the ones that do lose. It really doesn't. Right, 6 weeks left of this season. Things are starting to be decided, David.
They are, but it's remarkable that only three Step Six sides have so far secured a promotion playoff place. Bourne Town are one of them. Farnham Town, the Step 5 club with the 100% win record, have their new covered terrace in situ. The club have said they anticipate ground improvements, now taking a step back in priority. In the past 18 months, £150,000 has gone on upgrading the clubhouse, upgrading the food outlet, a second food outlet, a toilet block, stand, covered terrace and turnstile. There are rumours that a third turnstile may appear. There's a slight change to that, but we'll go on in a moment. Sherwood Colliery could be promoted, as we previously said on Saturday, if they beat Eastwood and Lincoln United lose at Skegvigus Town.
So I suppose in Farnham's case, it's Sandy, if you've got a man that's got more money than he knows what to do with and he's quite happy to throw it at you.
It does sound like that, doesn't it?
Anyway, good luck to him, I suppose. But there is a sting in the tail for Farnham coming up soon. News time, starting totally locally.
Yep, Ryan Rushden's short stint at Step 4 Grantham has come to an end as he moves back to Sleaford, allowing Greg Smith to duel at Retford United.
That's a bit of a merry-go-round, isn't it? Greg went from Grantham to Sleaford in a blaze of glory to be part of their management team no more than a few months ago, and now he seems like he's on his way to Retford United. I'm beginning to struggle to keep up with that.
Yeah, I mean, Retford United seem to be signing players left, right and centre. And the gentleman's name escapes me, but Sleaford Town have announced tonight that they've just signed a player from Deeping Rangers who's available to play against Newark on Saturday. So if anybody's done the homework on Sleaford, it sounds like we won't have a clue who's turning out for them.
We won't. Let's go around the country a little bit.
Craig Skelton and Simon Casanali are to manage Mask United next season. The former Seasiders players are moving from North Riding League Redcar Newmarket. That's a brilliant name, that is, isn't it?
It is, but what I put that in for the simple reason that, you know, Mask basically ran out of money, didn't they? They are starting at ground level again because they're taking a team from a management team from a Step 7 league.
Yes, so, hopefully it will work out for them, but yeah. They went up in a blaze of glory and then again, didn't they? And suddenly, the big boys game was actually quite expensive. Yeah. Step 6 Dartmouth have finally got their first point of the season at the 25th attempt, while Farnham won't be going through the season with a 100% win record as they drew their 26th match. I actually watched that because it's been streamed on Tuesday night. They lost a player after 7 minutes and they got a 0-0 draw at Knaphill. And to be fair, the commentators said they weren't expecting to get a lot out of Knaphill before the player got sent off. So, interesting game to watch.
Yeah, you've obviously got nothing to do at that time. I should find some more work. Right, below the pyramid.
The North East Norfolk League Division 2 has completed their season with the last fixtures played on the 2nd of March, with Madras Reserves being crowned champions. Is this the first league to be completed? Well, it's magic that they managed to do it with all the rain. It's obviously dry in that bit of Norfolk, or they play indoors.
Yeah.
Central Midlands Alliance, South Club Nottingham have folded. They sit bottom of the table with one victory and they haven't kicked a ball since the end of November. Likewise, Boston Bears have withdrawn from the Boston District League. Burnham United Football Club have launched a crowdfunding campaign to raise £9,000 towards the cost of replacing its leaking clubhouse roof. The club has already been awarded a grant for 75% of the overall £35,000 costs from the Football Foundation. The current roof is leaking and is beyond repair and will have to be replaced, they said.
But the intent on everybody's paying for it, but then. That's probably harsh. now to look at those teams that remember the season for the wrong reasons, and a North East team on the up.
Yes, regular listeners will know that our team was colour coats on the North East coast. They finally achieved their first victory of the season with a single goal victory over Newcastle Kemfika Amateurs. Sweet revenge for the 9-1 hammering they took back in August. Yeah, but that was quite sweet.
And a team from your neck of the woods, not on the up.
No, not such good news for Starminster Marshall. 23 defeats from 23 matches in the Dorset Premier League. 8 goals scored and 234 conceded. They're going down regularly, I think, 23-0. And I think Rob went to watch them and he was quite bored. I think it was only a 2-0 defeat, wasn't it?
I mean, I take my hat off to them because, you know, they haven't taken the easy option. They are there. They're playing every week. They're being hammered every week, but they are there. You know, we're not reading them in that list of teams that's packed up and absolutely good. Right, normally we would say, and that's it for this week, and thank our guests for participating, but we're not going to do that because David wants to know all about his day job.
Yes, you're involved in a project that's football in the community, I believe.
Yeah, so basically I work for the Iron Foundation at Scunthorpe United. In old money, we used to call Football in the Community. We then changed to Scunthorpe United Community Sport and Education Trust, and more recently, in the last year, the Iron Foundation. So we're basically, in a nutshell, the charity partner of the football club, and we're at the forefront that everything that Scunthorpe United does within our local community. So we cover everything from delivering after school clubs and covering PPA times at school, dinner time clubs, breakfast clubs. We do an awful lot of funded stuff through the Premier League, which is reading with students and supporting them with English and maths through the power of football. You can often, the stereotypical student that enjoys sport may struggle in the classroom, but with our coaches and our staff, it can enable that, you know, to open that door and break down that barrier to support them with important skills that maybe a normal teacher, if you like, could struggle with. We do other things on Friday evenings, which is working in partnership with the police, getting kids off the street, offering free football sessions. And then my main job is running a level 3 NCFE qualification for students where they can come to us, represent Scunthorpe United playing football, while studying, you know, a program that will enable them to make the step to university. Or we've got a number of students that have gone out to America or a various other different career paths. So we're quite a big organization. And then in more recent times with the new owners of the club, they totally understand the community and how important the community is to any club, but, you know, more so Scunthorpe United than where we are at the minute. Everything we do within the community is going to have an impact. I think, you know, the big clubs at the top of the pyramid probably don't value their foundations naturally because they probably don't need to, which isn't necessarily their fault. But everything we do in our community is going to have an impact. And if we can get new supporters coming through the door, you know, supporting the club, it's only going to help the situation the club finds itself in at the minute, which sits high up in Conference North, which, with the greatest respect to everyone else in that league, it's not really somewhere a club as you like Scunthorpe United should be, but that's often the way it goes with a lot of clubs nowadays. If they're mismanaged and owners don't run the club appropriately, this is what can happen, which is a real shame. And I know I've gone off on a tangent a little bit, but there has got to be something done in regards to the ownership of football clubs. And I know what they're trying to do with the financial fair play. I think it's right in a sense, but I don't think it's fit for purpose. There's not just clubs like Scunthorpe United that have been stripped of its assets, mismanaged and found itself in over £1 million worth of debt. There's Southend, Reading are in a pickle at the minute, you know, and it's completely not fair. You've got these supporters of these clubs that are going to lose a football club just because somebody has deemed the football club, they don't really bother about it. They just see it as a cash cow and a way to make money. And then when they're done with it, off they go in the sunset and they don't have to answer any, you know, any questions. It's completely unfair. But sorry, I've gone off on a tangent a little bit. You can understand my passion. You can understand my passion for the football club.
No, I think you're absolutely spot on in in what you just. There's two things I want to pick up from that though. One, Carl Colt's manager of the one of the girls' teams, manager of one of the boys' teams. What seems to me out every hour of the day in the week with the foundation. You wouldn't like to send through our podcast a message to the wife just to, in case she listens to it, in case she's missing you at all.
Yeah, well, just correct me slightly. It's a boys' team my daughter plays for.
Right.
So don't add another team, for goodness sake. I do the mini courts on a Thursday night. That's a separate session once a week. And then, my grand nearly fell into the same trap. And then the boys' team my little girl plays for. So boys' team. And then, the Saturday. Yeah, she's fantastic. She supports me in everything you do. And it's a good job. I get the odd moan every now and again, especially on Tuesday night when we had a game. It was actually a birthday. So you can imagine it was not ideal, especially when I've got to come home and say we've lost. It's a double whammy. But yeah, without her and her support, it's I struggle to do what I do. So it makes it a lot easier, put it that way. I'm incredibly thankful for her and, her support.
Fancy having a birthday on game night in the football season. Shocking. A lot more seriously, with what's going off in and around Scunthorpe at the moment, not with the football club, but with the steel industry and countless redundancies look like they're on the card. How important is it what a football club can do for the youngsters of Scunthorpe? Schools are obviously there, but you're something else, something extra that they can look forward to. And there's going to be a lot of families, through no fault of their own, that's going to find themselves struggling. And there's just something you can give to these youngsters, isn't there?
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think we nearly lost the football club, but the bottom line is, and I think a town, like you say, where the steel industry's struggling, it has been for years. You've seen places like Middlesbrough, Redcar, where they've lost the steel, and it has a massive impact on the local community. The same goes for that football club. If that football club went, the town would have it would have been a real struggle for a lot of people that look forward to that Saturday afternoon fix of following their local club and supporting it like they do home and away. So we're thankful for that. But in terms of us and the foundation, 20 years ago, we used to go and just deliver football. Now we're an organisation where we do a lot of health and wellbeing. We do walking football on a Thursday morning for over 50s. We do chair-based exercises. Jo, who looks after our health and wellbeing, is tasked. Her role is, she's not a football person, you'd say. She enjoys the football, but she's not, her expertise aren't in that role. We're trying to do a lot more in health and wellbeing, supporting the local community, people with mental health. Like I said, chair-based exercises, walking football, free football for kids on a Friday evening. We do a lot of work in deprived areas of Scunthorpe, offering kids the opportunities to play football in a safe environment with qualified people that can support these kids that just don't get the opportunity to go play for a grassroots team. And it's scary to say, really. Some of these kids cannot go play for a grassroots team because they can't afford it. They can't afford to pay. The subs for some grassroots team is maybe £150 a year. Kids just can't afford to do that. So that's incredibly unfair for a kid that enjoys his football, just doesn't get that, loses that opportunity through money. So where we plug the gap is giving kids the opportunity to play football, like I say, in these environments competitively with members of staff that can inspire these students and keep them away from trouble. We were funded through the Police Crime Commissioner, because they understand these issues in these places. We work with a lot of asylum seekers, various different nationalities. We do an awful lot in the local community to try and affect crime rates. It's much more to it than what people think. It's just kicking a ball around. It's much more to it. Looking after people's mental health, making sure they're not getting themselves into trouble. It goes far beyond just kicking of the ball. And that's why a lot of our work now is based around social things, making sure when they do a session after, they're sticking around and talking to our staff, or our walking football session, for example, part and parcel of it is having a coffee after and sitting a chat where them blokes there, some of them may, I dare say, will look forward to that session every single week.
as much to have a coffee after of kicking a ball around. So times have changed, and you know, we try and use the power of football, you know, to give people opportunities and make their lives better.
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant, and I'm sure David will have something to say on that.
Yeah, it is nice to see a club like yours that have been through adversity itself, but are still putting something back into the community. It's very easy for other places to say, well, you know, Scunthorpe's out of the way. It happens to loads of places, but you're doing something positive, which is really, really good. Yeah, it's a good job your other half is fairly tolerant then, isn't it? whatever. We do know somebody whose wife had to go and operate a turnstile at a game a couple of years ago on her birthday, and I don't think she's ever forgotten him for that, but never mind. Good stuff, Gav. Really appreciate you coming on to talk to us again. And I mean, you were going to come and talk to us a few weeks ago, but you were taking the Colts or one of the junior sides to a game that night. So
Yeah. Always busy, unfortunately.
Yeah, appreciate your time and the insight. Been really, really good and appreciative. And hopefully you'll come on and talk to us again. Maybe next season you're doing something in the pyramid, but fingers crossed and see how it goes.
That'd be my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Have you bought a trophy cabinet, or do you think about that after next Friday?
Oh, goodness. There's one at the ground that the kids use. So it's not something I've thought about, but fingers crossed there may be a space.
Hopefully. The best of luck to you. We're right behind you. We really are. The best of luck to you. And we'll let everybody know following week how you got on. Gav, it's been a pleasure, an absolute pleasure. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Well, next week's guest is Matt Harrison, known on X or Twitter as it used to be, Matt Los Boyo. He's a Swansea fan, a Merthyr boy who lives in Spain. He's hosted a ground hopping blog when he lived in the Manchester area. And he's also went to live in Slovakia for 2 years. And the reason we got to hear of him was actually he sent in the photo that I chose as the picturesque ground photo, which was of a ground in Slovakia. So he runs a couple of sort of foreign sports podcasts as well. So that's right. Yes. I think the thing is, if you can't take a joke, you shouldn't have entered.
Well, if he's a Welshman coming on here, then I hope he can take a joke.
Well, we've been very kind to our previous Welsh guests.
Okay. Right. And on that note, we're miles over time, but it's been fantastic. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you, Gavin. Thank you, David. Thank you, Mick. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Good night, all.